Why are we here? Is it to do work better with computers jacked into our brains who might be running the show? Or is there something more to this? Is there more purpose here?
Abel, man, thanks for coming on the show.
I am psyched to talk to you, Colin.
I got a lot in store. I want to take it in a little bit different route because, like I just said, you've been on, I mean, how many shows have you done at this point on the Fat Burning Man?
We've done over 350, but counting other shows, well over like a
And like,
thousand, maybe thousands. Yeah.
right, because you've guessed it on a ton as well, right? Yeah, that's crazy, man. We're at like 100 shows and I'm like, my gosh, it's like a year and a half of work. And it seems fast, but at the same time, you know how much work goes into it behind the scenes. Like, it's a
Yeah, but you
lot.
started good. Like, most people have to work out for a year, a few years, grow up a little bit, get used to being in front of a camera, have something to say. A lot of people skip that part. But man, you started off really well and you're cranking now. I mean, like, you're definitely a pro. I get stoked watching your videos, to be
Dude,
honest.
I appreciate that a lot. Today I was talking about that. I was like, listen, I've done 1,000 YouTube videos at this point where like the first 300, like nobody watched. You
Yeah,
know, and it's like
that's
it's
how it
that
works.
grind where that
Yep.
when you do something because you enjoy it, and I would do it anyways, probably, right? It's like almost a form of
Right.
therapy for me, you know. So it's like when you find that thing, that's usually you're on some kind of trajectory towards some kind of success as long as you keep going. So
Yeah, and they can come in cycles. It doesn't always have to be the same thing.
for sure, for sure. And there was a lot of learning curve through this and everything, and you know, for sure. So I'm gonna ask you some. We're just gonna get into questions, and then obviously, like rabbit holes will evolve, and we'll just like dive in them if we want to, pretty much.
Beautiful.
Okay, so like the first thing is, what are you currently focused on? Like, because you have a kind of a general health show, and you cover all kinds of things. Like, you have a cookbook, you have this, you do a lot of different things. You're obviously a musician. What's like the big kind of mission, purpose, like message that you're trying to currently get out now, based on your evolution doing this for a long time?
I love that question. I think it's to some degree fighting on behalf of nature, but that's not what it sounds like in today's environment, if
So what
that
do you mean
makes
by
sense.
that? Yeah, can you unpack
So,
that?
like my latest book, Designer Babies Still Get Scabies, which is a book of poetry and satire and humor, people have asked, like, what are the themes of that book? And that's really a main one, that humans have this belief that science is 100% there, that humans have full dominion
Capital
over.
S science, right? Capital S science, research says, like, dude, what
Yeah.
is 2020? They're going to be doing science in 2100, making fun of us. Like, come on.
Exactly. So the idea that we can hook into people's brains and then expect that to be a good outcome and start tinkering with our DNA and RNA and all sorts of other things above nature, with the idea that logically we're smarter than all of this and we're better than it spiritually is kind of the subtext there. My book and a lot of my work is an argument against that. And you could argue as well that The Wild Diet, my book back in 2015, that's definitely one of the main pieces, that one of the threads throughout that book, that when we try to be smarter than nature, a lot of times we're playing a trick on ourselves.
Yeah. So how does that manifest? And when people come to you and you're like, I want to get healthy, I want to lose weight. It's always some goal people are trying to achieve for the most part. No one wakes up and they're like, I want to be in tune with nature, unless it's like connected to some reason why they want to be in tune with nature. You know what I'm saying? So like, how do you bridge that for like the average everyday person?
Yeah, it's such a great question because a lot of that is driven by environment. But recently, smelling the fall and the leaves, it triggers memories from when I was a kid. And I was just on another interview with a woman who studies brain science, and she talked about how people, like especially kids, wake up in the morning, get in 5 to 10 minutes of exercise. The research is super powerful. It has effects that cascade the rest of the day. And it's just like the idea of waking up and doing 10 minutes of exercise, whether you're a kid or adult, sounds terrible. That sounds like a terrible idea.
For a
But
lot of
going
people,
out in the
yeah.
middle of nowhere in New Hampshire, it triggered the memory of me being with my younger brother and waiting for the school bus and seeing our breath and a fresh frost, and it was cold and whatever. But we would just go to the basketball hoop and just play for 10 minutes, and we'd work up a sweat and we'd make each other laugh, and sometimes we'd punch each other or whatever and then run to the bus. And that's what it can look like for other people too. This doesn't have to be, it can be disciplined and it can be, kind of dry and uncreative.
Like
Like that
regimented, right?
militant approach can totally work work too, but it can look like something that's a lot more fun. And that's how I like to look at all of this, like cyclical as well, where it doesn't have to be the same sport. It doesn't have to be the same activity all year long, but try to get something in. And if you can do these little things, you kind of have these check boxes that are really simple and obvious, but it doesn't matter if you know that you should do them if you're not doing them every day.
Yeah. So the message is kind of like, we want to get back to nature and do the things that, you know, our ancestors would have done in nature, because these are just the most, they're the best for humans, because then maybe I can connect that to losing 10 pounds, or because then maybe I'll feel better and think better and work better and sleep better. And I mean, it's one of those things like, go in nature, everything's better. Like, it's kind of hard. People don't get that. They want to be like, go in nature and like sprint, and then, okay, I'll get strong legs and I'll burn some fat, whatever. Right. But we got to get back to kind of the basics and have more fluid, just like, hey, we belong in the wild, but we literally spend no time in it. I mean, that's kind of what it is way for most people.
Yeah. And it's not, the benefits are not obvious.
Right.
And they take time, and you almost have to learn them. You have to be exposed to them. You need to be indoctrinated by nature. You need to be inspired in some way. But I was just on a call with, I think, our mutual friend, Dr. Michael Ruscio. He was talking about how recently he's been watching the sunset like every night, and it's just like become a thing for him, how he just looks forward to it. Now, he didn't know why he was doing it at first, but now it's a thing that he does, and he sleeps better. He wakes up in the morning fresh and just like starts crushing it, doing the things that are most important. Compared to, like, I made a mistake last night because I have a long day of interviews today that I was on, I think it was my iPad, like later than I should have been. Like,
oh, something came up. I can ruin it.
It was advertising. It was like stupid ad. I literally woke up in the middle of the night with that person's face in my mind with that ad. I'm just like, oh my God, it's terrible. Compared to Dr. Ruscio, who I'm sure was sleeping like a baby because he watched the sunset instead and allowed himself to kind of recover, get in sync with nature, and not get aggravated and anxious, which is kind of the tendency of everyone when you're exposed to modern technology. So taking a step back and exposing yourself to nature, to really getting in there, or just getting a small dose of it, is so important. But like I said, the benefits kind of cascade over time instead of being obviously great all at once.
Yeah, I know. It's. I mean, imagine that our message is, hey, human animal, you are designed by the wild for the wild, but all I want you to do is go outside for 10 minutes. Like, even that as a message is like, that's how far removed we are from it.
We are.
Right. And so, like, what are some strategies other than just going outside? Like, you know, go outside, take a walk, obviously you can like meditate, yoga, it's like all kinds of different things. But like, what are some of your cues and or methods, modalities for like for getting outside more, for staying outside, et cetera? And not obviously getting pulled back into the comfort of AC and your phone devices, because that's what it does, like pulls us back in.
It does. It does. Well, I have a commitment to myself to get out once a week on a kind of a solo running adventure where I'll take a couple hours, and it's just me and the elements. And we live at 8,000 feet. I like to run up to 9,500 or 10,000. There are lakes up there in the mountains. It's just incredible. And then throughout the day, like, I'm looking away from the screen during most interviews at two windows, looking at the different trees and animals that are here, and the deer sometimes come by. And so I think there's a tendency to, you know, those are kind of two opposite sides, where there's the commitment of going out on a longer hike or going out on some sort of nature excursion, which I think definitely has benefits. And I like to do that at least once a week if I can. But on a day-to-day basis, one of the ways that most people can kind of work it into your own life is try to get the outside inside. Try to spend your time, if you can, in a place where you can not just look at the screen in front of you in a windowless room under artificial light, but kind of at the time that you're doing your work, maybe find a way to do it standing up, doing it in different places, in different positions, exposed to, you know, windows where you can see nature, or even like in back of me, have some pictures up of nature that simulate that, you know, just wonderful environment, your happy place, you know, like get a picture of even a sentimental picture of nature that you love. Yep. Just those little pictures inside can really do a lot, as can in Asian cultures. When I first traveled over there, I was really inspired by how natural some of the indoor environments are.
A lot of plants, a lot of green. Yep.
Yes. And rocks, even stones.
Rocks, even water, waterfalls, like indoor waterfalls and stuff is very like Asian. you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's very human is what it is. It's right. just the Westerners are, our culture is younger and to some degree more cut off from that. But I think if you explore those rabbit holes, you'll find that that you're not the first one to think of this, right?
Yeah, no, totally. So it's like, yeah, we need to put ourselves back into our natural habitat. And even in some ways we're tricking ourselves, right? Because you can see that they've done research with this, like hanging certain pictures of nature or even having plants in like the color green. In fact, there was a really interesting study they did in an urban environment where there was a lot of graffiti and it was very dirty and it was concrete jungle, right? So what they did is they planted some shrubbery, put some green there, and the littering went down, the graffiti went down. People like felt a responsibility to like make it better. It just like spoke to them. And I bet you nobody knew that it was the plants doing that. Like it was just like this weird subconscious thing that happened, right? Because think about it, we're born in the wild. Everything's green all the time, pretty much. Like we live there our whole lives. And now we live in like cream colored, ugly painted warehouse rooms where I'm in right now, like with artificial lighting and stuff, you know? But if you analyze your day, you know how you have like a phone tracking where it shows like how much screen time? Imagine we had that for life. It would be like 97% ratio of indoor artificial light, grand. Artificial grand. Smells and everything, right? And I just don't think we even have the research to understand probably what it's doing to us. You know, it's just like one more environmental toxin that we can't really research because we can't lock humans in a cage and just like test them for 20 years, you know? Same thing with nutrition.
Right now.
I mean, yeah, exactly. But we're just not getting the data out of it, right? Or I guess we are, but it's epidemiological data and who knows what they'll do with it. You know?
Well, another thing about like humans that's funny, if you try to look from the outside in, this is very silly. The way that we build our environment is toxic. It's completely toxic, whether you're looking at the light, the blue light that's built into almost everything, the EMFs,
LED
the
lights,
gassing from the chemicals, everything that's built out of plastic and degrading as soon as it's installed. All of these things are completely toxic. And then also just the shapes of the rooms, the cubes are completely uninspiring. And sonically for me as a musician, terrible. Like,
acoustically.
If you look back at ancient building technique, like people have this assumption that those who came before us are knuckle dragging idiots.
But hubris of the current age. Yep.
But you look, or you travel to Europe, you travel around the world to some of these places that have this ancient architecture that's still intact. And even just being in those spaces, you can't help but be inspired by how in the world did they do this? And there's a sweetness to the sound because they understood sonic engineering. Now everything's just kind of like spit out by computer chips in these cubes being built up and built up and built up. And they don't even have humans to live in these places that could afford them. And like, that's the way that it's been running for many decades or hundreds of years now. And I would argue that that's not necessarily progress. So we have to get ahead of this in our own lives and really take responsibility, put up our shields, put on your blue blockers and understand that it's an uphill battle, but it's our responsibility and we can do this. We can kind of live this hybrid life because I've unplugged from the internet for a year twice now with my wife on our travels and it just wasn't available sometimes. And it benefits all of us to be highly intentional and not necessarily get rid of all screens and all technology. That's not the answer, I don't think. But use it responsibly as a tool. Otherwise, it will use you. And that's not feeling when that kicks in.
Yeah, no. And kind of speaking of almost like choice and red pilling and, you know, you have a very moderate approach where you're very approachable for a lot of people, I feel like. I think that's probably why you've been successful. You don't go really aggressive on any points or you're not very like dogmatic about things. But like, what are some of the things in 2020 that maybe before or as of 2020 have kind of made you question some of the like, well, why is this normal or average? And is a normal or average, I mean, the way this our society defines it is almost at the sick end of the spectrum. Like, and if you're in the middle of that bell curve, you're usually not doing too good, you know? So what are some of those things, like obviously environment and the way we live in screen time, but is there anything else that red pill per se that people need to kind of look into or be aware of?
Well, even just aging, the thing that struck me, I was fortunate to, with my wife, really travel a lot internationally when we were in our late 20s and early 30s. And, you know, in America, if you're in your 50s and you can still like get out of the front seat of your car and stand up, you're like doing pretty well.
Wow. Yeah. But,
you know, down in Peru and in parts of Asia, we hung out with people who were in their 70s and 80s, like going up mountains at altitude, who crushed me. Just like, I'm supposed to be in great shape and like well-trained and just crushed me. And obviously altitude has a lot to do with that, but so does, you know, what they've been doing going up and down that mountain every day for 80 years. You know, basically you can keep doing these things in your life that are highly active, that are very athletic, require strength. As long as you keep doing them, you can keep doing them. The use it or lose it cliche has a totally different ring to it now. Now that you see these people, like right. when I first saw those people that age doing those things, I'm like, wow, I can't believe what has been normalized. And also, like, people talk about pandemics and viruses nonstop, but how much do they talk about the link with metabolic dysfunction and obesity that's obviously at the root of a lot of the problems and the comorbidities? You know, this is not a new problem. It's been progressively getting worse, so obviously worse. So there are a number of things around us that are obviously not working. And I would say my overall answer to that question is, if you want to be healthy today, you have to be swimming upstream and be willing to be one of the weird ones. I know that you embrace that, as do I.
Sure. Yep.
And what you realize is, if you do this long enough and you link up with the right people, is being the weird one in the room. Like, once you get that group of weirdos and that camaraderie, that tribe, it's really a beautiful thing. There is a group of people. You could argue that maybe we're going to be the survivors of the fallout of whatever we all kind of see.
Yeah, or the evolution, the co-evolution of the hominid species, which I've thought about a lot. It's like, we have the Wally on one end that are going to keep getting sick and sick, at least until maybe science solves that somehow with like some magic pill, who knows. And then you're going to have those that do well in our food-rich environment, right, in our toxic environments, and they're going to keep evolving, getting stronger and stronger, and probably make more money and have more power. Like, it's really actually scary. Like, we can look at Darwin's natural selection happening, and it never stops happening, right? But I feel like it's so obvious, though, because like 40 years ago, everybody was still kind of lean, and like, you didn't have like obesity. It was so prevalent, and you just did not have as much of a gap. You really didn't, you know? And like today, though, it's so stark. You're like, so, like you said, some people can't get out of the front seat of their car, and I could literally like jump, climb, do these things that they could never even dream of. And it makes me very worried for like my son's future, because it's like, when it starts getting into the kids in high school, like, and we're going to see a bigger, bigger gap. I mean, humans are tribalistic creatures. Like, the way I see it, we're just going to eventually either branch off or force ourselves off, or like some kind of tribalism is going to kick in. Who knows what that's going to look like? But that's pretty scary for the future of humanity. You know?
Yeah, and a lot of people are tinkering with the idea, and it's certainly being, you know, kind of, they're planting that seed in our minds through media of jacking into the matrix, attaching our brains to machines, because that's the only way we're going to get jobs in the future. And to me, that's a very dangerous argument. And it also makes me ask, why are we here? You know, is it to do work better with computers jacked into our brains who might be running the show? Or is there something more to this? Is there more purpose here? And also, what is the thing that we maybe shouldn't do? What would be going down a notch spiritually? And I would argue that a lot of technology, while it is an extremely powerful and useful tool and can be used for good, the path that people are naturally taking is a dark one. And especially, I've had a lot of experience creating in virtual reality and 360, and I'm doing some virtual reality meditation voiceovers and things like that. So I'm trying to do it in a way that's more about getting in touch with nature than the dark side of that. Once you get that upgrade in resolution and experience, especially for kids coming up, like these technologies, once you experience them yourself, you realize that they're almost as powerful as dreams. You will dream about these experiences in a different way than like you would never dream about your phone or social media this way. It's like this starts to really get into your consciousness. And so we need to use technology responsibly. And we can't, at the same time, let these technology platforms that have so obviously burned us and burned our trust and really squandered it and degraded the human experience, we can't let them get away with it, in the sense that we can't just keep operating as usual using these platforms and expect it to get better. It's up to us to build our way out of this and innovate and hopefully build something new that prevents the dystopia that we're entering right now.
Right. Yeah. And the consolidation of power and control, you know, what happens when the first individual human gets a superpower AI that like nobody, I mean, it's on another realm. Like, you can't even compete with it. Right. And if we do have that breakthrough AI or breakthrough some other technology or whatever, like, it's going to create a massive amount of power and probably wealth as a result. Wealth and power, they're going to go hand in hand. And like, we better just hope that person is a altruistic pro-human person rather than like some evil villain, as you see so often. And as they say, power corrupts, absolute power absolutely corrupts. You could take the most not sinister human. And I think it can, if you get enough power over enough period of time, you can tell yourself stories. And that's why I do believe power does corrupt over time. Like, I don't think everyone's just born Hitler. Like, Hitler is a child and he's innocent and then he becomes Hitler. That's through life. That's through whatever happened. You know what I'm saying? So like, these are very major existential threats that like most people aren't really thinking about or talking about. And I get it. So that's why I want to bring them back to, you know, what can people do in everyday life? Because most of us aren't going to be battling like our AI overlords anytime soon, or it might happen and there's nothing we can do about it. So,
well, we are, but at a lower resolution. We're not jacked into the Matrix yet, but we are being driven to the ground by AI.
Well, so what do you mean by that? Do you mean like kind of the manipulation of like the media, machines, politics, everything? I mean, at this point, it's all mind control.
Even if we just look at social media or Google, we now, a lot of us realize that this is not a reflection of reality or a timeline.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a curated or somewhat biased or manipulated by an algorithm, kind of just like soup of whatever they want to show you. That's advertiser friendly, hopefully for them.
Yep.
That hopefully for the advertiser drives you in a particular purchasing or political direction. And all these things are just being done to us. And
that's a good
point. Promise of the internet, you know, for me growing up, I was born in 1984, literally and figuratively, I guess. it's a gnarly thing to think that the internet was a way to connect openly, that would be a meritocracy, that would enable society to get better and truly communicate openly.
Yep.
To know that was the promise that turned into this, no matter where you find yourself in this equation, you have to realize that it's bad for us at this point. Whatever, you know, like whatever you feel, and a lot of people, and I've heard many multiple generations say this over and over, they're just like, well, there's infinite information. All the world's knowledge is in your pocket. And that is just not true anymore. While it may be true, it's now been swamped by disinformation, misinformation.
It's not effectively true, right? Marketing. For effective purposes, it's not true, is what you mean. Because you have to really know what you're looking for to even find certain things. And if you don't know to even look for it, you're not going to find it, basically.
Ever.
Yep.
But you're going to think it's not there because you've been presented with it. And so now what's happening, and I know you speak a lot about this, and tip of the hat to you because it takes a lot of courage to do so, is that these tech platforms are censoring one side of the conversation to make it appear as if this is what everyone thinks. This is the consensus view, no matter how crazy that is. And no matter if even that is the conspiracy theory. Now, you know, it's one of those things where I don't want Zuckerberg and Facebook and Bezos and Elon to be the one who are programming my ethics chip when I'm plugged into the Matrix. I don't want to hand them the keys. All of these people are unelected. And if that's not to say that shadow banning and censorship should never happen under any circumstances, but the illusion is when people log on, they think that they're being presented with what's coming from their friends and family, what's coming from the authorities and the experts that you find through Google, but that's just not what you're finding anymore. Even if you look for a particular person, in many cases, you're more likely to find an advertiser over them or someone impersonating them or some copy from China or some just ridiculousness with no accountability, no matter what platform you're talking about, even on Amazon. I'm sure you and I, we deal with this stuff all the time and it seems like there's no recourse and that, you know, to some degree, evil and avarice is being rewarded in this environment that we're in. So anyway, you have to realize that it is to some degree a toxic environment and you need to have your shields up. And one thing that has really helped me is look at social media, look at the internet as a way to connect with other people and try to connect with that person, not their accounts. Don't follow social media accounts. Don't follow platforms. Follow people. Look them up on a regular basis. And that's how I've been able to navigate through this because I haven't been shown my friends and I've been encouraged to message some of my dead friends on some of these platforms by these platforms. And just like the level of manipulation and it's unsettling as a human, you know?
Yeah. And anybody that's been in this industry, like they don't a lot of times know how these algorithms work. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, it's like they keep adding things, adjustments, whatever. And you have these things where there's complexities beyond the grasp of the human understanding. Like you might have like 1,000 data or a million data points. Right. And like a human is supposed to like think about how those should be weighted Like, it's literally beyond our comprehension, which is why a lot of people are afraid of AI, because of how powerful it can be. But that's a huge topic, you know, and I just think that the awareness of it, of how it does run you, like, you choose to use social media and it should be used in a certain way. Like, for example, I've had to lately get out of the comment section of some posts because I get pulled in, and I just know this about my personality. If I see somebody leaves a comment that I want to respond to, I cannot let them be the get the last word in. Like, it's just, it's the way it is, you know what I'm saying? And so I have to choose to not even go there. Right. Yeah. And it's just one of those things, like, we don't have a good solution for this just yet. And so more people voting with how they spend their time and effort, being aware, like, that, that will make a difference, because, you know, big tech will, they will change their tune if the advertisers aren't getting results. So, like, there is, you know, the consumer does have power, but I feel like when someone like you and I talk, and maybe our audience, people that are aware of the, already onto these things, we're so far removed from, like, the average person that just, like, mindlessly goes on Facebook or Instagram and like, you know, they work their 9 to 5 and they have kids and, like, they run a busy life. They don't have time to look into this stuff. Like, I get it. Right. Like, I don't blame those people. And that's where it is scary, because you have more of those people than you do people like you and I that might have the freedom of time to think and go down these rabbit holes. Right.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
To your point about AI as well, you may be familiar with the Dilbert guy, Scott Adams.
Oh yeah.
Who's been doing some great work recently, but he mentioned in a recent video that one of his YouTube videos was demonetized. Mm-hmm, and so he got in touch with, you know, he's at the level, the tier level where he is someone he can actually talk to there. And so he did, he talked to some humans and he's like, what's the deal with this? They're like, I don't know. We'll look into it. And and they got back to him and they're like, well, we don't know. The AI basically decided to demonetize your video. And our answer is we don't know. And so that means that we're already at the point where AI is deciding what is and what is not seeable, visible, true fact. And the humans who are
trying to rein it in, they don't even know how to do it.
Don't even know
why. Right.
They don't even know
how it works. It's like Frankenstein. Yeah. In fact, it's funny that you brought that up. It just made me think of, I've been trying to buy a new iMac from Apple for 2 weeks now. Okay. And I've talked to senior support. I've been transferred. And I don't do this type of stuff. Like, it shows you how much I need my iMac, and I'm an Apple fanboy at this point.
Yeah.
Because I won't buy a PC. It just won't. So I spent like a couple hours on support, whatever. Every time I place the order, it gets canceled a day later. And then everybody at support says, we don't know why. There's nothing wrong with your account. It's right. Every bank, I've tried every credit card. It's not a payment thing. Like, and it literally cancels. And like, we don't know why. Nobody knows why. We can't tell you why. We can't help you. And they're like, you should just buy it through somebody else's name. Like, that was the answer that I got from the number one market cap company in the planet. And I spent what, $20,000-$30,000 of my lifetime with Apple. Like, wow. And that's the level to which they can get. It's like, I just think to myself, is there not somebody higher up that I can get to that can just like unblock my account or whatever? Like, there's some weird like algorithmic block that the AI just doesn't want to accept my order. And I've ordered literally 20 orders, and every time it's a day later, it gets blocked. It's insane. And so I'm to the point where I have to literally go to the Apple store and pick it up by hand and like schedule an appointment. Like, it's just, it's crazy. But it shows you that the bigger we create these things and the more complex we make them, and now the more that these machines get involved, where that itself is an evolving science, like computer science and AI, like, a lot of the researchers are like figuring things out in the dark, right? And they don't know what's going to stick and what's going to work. So what happens when that gets away from us even more than it already kind of is getting away from us, you know? And like, that is very scary. But let me bring it back to some practical health and nutrition, because that's kind of like what you've been doing, right? Like, this is a question that came up that I thought about. Like, what is the most common, or a couple of the most common kind of mail-in, call-in questions that you get? And what are your typical answers to those?
Yeah. I get a lot of questions about fasting.
Okay.
And I am a big fan personally
of
doing intermittent fasting.
Yep.
And I started off with a 16:8, and now it's more of like a 20-4 type approach with a 1.5 meal a day type thing.
I'm the same way. Like, one big meal, and then like, if you're hungry, a smaller meal, like where it's like a leftovers meal. It's exactly what I do.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the questions. And what I would say to people is that you kind of do that one step at a time. It's kind of like building muscle and just pushing breakfast a little bit over time. Also recognizing that it's not for everyone all the time, and that fasting more is not the answer. So that's one question that I get, and that's a brief overview. And then also I get a lot of questions that are kind of people saying like, I put in all my exercise, I've been good, how come I'm not getting results?
Exactly. Yep.
So that one, I'm pretty sure you could answer.
Well, it requires diagnosis, but you know, like for me, I just go to the first principles. What are like stress, sleep, walk more water, prioritize protein, you know, like whatever. And then a big thing I've been on, cause like I've been doing carnivore diet on YouTube a lot, and I see tons of comments, and people have to be patient. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could speak on that, cause you've done hundreds of episodes at this point. But like for me, results for the human body is like you take a few steps and then you stall, and then your body tries to maintain homeostasis. Mm-hmm. Then you take a few steps and then you stall. And like every inch you go, you need more time and more consistency to get to the next level. I mean, most of us have been on like 15-year health journeys. Like, come on, guys. Right. You're not going to go from standard American diet to next month losing 50, 60 pounds, even though I've literally seen some people have done that, but they're going to hit a plateau. And then you're going to have to like figure out what that is for you.
And that's the hard part. You want to get, especially in this superficial, just like instant access, instant gratification culture that we all live in. Even the people who post on Instagram don't look like their Instagram, like real life pictures. Yep. It's full of filters, but even before that, maybe a muscle pump or a good day or restricting salt more than usual or whatever it is. So I think it's really important that people, as they do get started with this, to not be discouraged by the fact that you're not getting instant results on the scale with the way that you look, with the way that you feel. The way that you feel should be an indicator, but sometimes it takes a little feeling weird and gnarly as your body tries these new things like being fasted or transitioning to burning fat.
That's a big one. Sugar. People get stuck on that.
Yeah, and so be patient with yourselves and understand as well that it doesn't matter if you do this for 30 days. It really doesn't. Like the only way that that's useful is if you get great results and then you find out that it works, and then you learn later that you can come back to it. But hopefully you have to do this forever. You know, it's not something that you just kind of like dab your toes into, but you also don't have to become a fitness bunny who's just like nibbling on cabbage and celery for the rest of your life. Like you can have a lot of fun with this. And I think the best way to look at it is you go through different cycles, you go through different seasons. So try to think of each of these different seasons and try to break this up into smaller goals, you know, and like maybe not doing the same sport or the same activity all the time, but kind of cross training and following your own natural instincts and what seems fun to you at the time. And I know for me, it's you pulled me into a ton of different sports and activities and adventures. And I love that. But like the ones that I did when I was a teenager or even in my 20s, like, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. I feel like people want the kind of like all or nothing, like, here's my program. I'll do this. So I'll get results. And then, you know, I'll stop or I, you know,
even I'll stop.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll do this till I get results. Then I'll stop.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. I was going to pull on that thread, but there's actually like this question here that I wanted to get to. So you've had a lot of guests on your shows. You've had a lot of kind of notable big name guests, and there's 1, 2, 3, there's 6 here that what I want to do is I want to give you their name and I want you to try to remember like 1 or 2 of the big things from that episode or person that you learned that kind of like come to the surface. Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
So let's start with the first one here. We got Ben Greenfield.
Ben, I've been so inspired by Ben recently. I watched him play, I think he was on ukulele and singing on like an Instagram story with his kids in the background. His wife, I think, was there. And he is someone who just dives head first and
all the
does
way
the work and he goes. And like he makes mistakes. He often admits them more than many other people would. So I have, you know, the more the years tick by, the more respect I have for Ben. And he's a friend of mine too. So I appreciate that.
That's great.
It's nice that people like to know some of these people over different stages of the journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. If you had to take one big thing idea from Ben that like more people need to just kind of internalize.
Just do the work.
Yeah. And like, he's a good example of that. You can see some of the stuff that he's done and experiments and everything for sure. Do the work. Okay. Next one we got on here. This is an interesting one because I actually read his book, but I don't agree with all his ideas on some things. Dr. Stephen Gundry. So that plant paradox, right? Author.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so he has a very specific list of certain foods that are and are not okay. One that really stuck out for me was cashews because it's a relative of poison ivy.
Yummy cashews.
I have terrible reactions to poison ivy. And so for me, I avoided them for a while. And then I started eating them again because they kind of come in every nut mix. And you know, so it's like some degree of like practicality is what tends to not keep the long-term habit or enforcement of some of these ideas. And also it's like some people say that peanuts are the worst enemy in all the world. And some people say that it's cashews and some people say that it's almonds, some other people, you know?
Right.
And so for him, I think he's extremely interesting to listen to. He has some unique ideas. I do encourage people to listen to him for those ideas because they are different. I can't say that I agree or disagree, but I'm definitely willing to put some of them into action and see how it goes, especially with some more testing, which I'm going to be doing with continuous glucose monitoring and some other tests that I have going, you know, if measuring cashews versus peanuts versus almonds.
Or whatever, right.
It would be really interesting to see how that actually shows up. And I think he has evidence of his beliefs and philosophies.
Right.
And a lot of them I share. I would say like 80-20, we agree about things. And then there are specific examples where he's very, very particular about.
Yeah. Well, and I read the book and I like the book. And I think he's definitely right about, you know, the plant defenses and, lectins and things like that. I agree. But to which extent the average person in everyday life needs to like modulate that, like that's right. Where you get the full spectrum of human genes and gut health and all the different things, you know. And that actually leads me to our next guest, who on this topic believes that broccoli can kill you, Dr. Paul Saladino, who we also had on my show as well.
I really like Paul as a person, and I love the way that he talks through a lot of these ideas and backs them up, but also just presents the argument of, well, what if by default plants aren't the healthiest thing?
Right.
And I think that's a very important stance for people to hear from. Hearing from people arguing from these different belief systems and ideas, vegans, carnivores, and everyone in between, I think it's really important to listen to other people on their soapbox and ask them, well, why do you eat steaks all day? Mm-hmm. Or why do you eat organ meats all day? Or why do you never eat any meat whatsoever?
Right.
And so anyway, for Paul, I learned that from that perspective, to experiment with less veg, see how that went, with less green veggies, with less roughage for a while, do some cycles and periods like that, some days. And I would say that that was beneficial, and I learned from it because I didn't feel worse or better necessarily. It just felt a little different, and I ate different things. And so I love Paul for being an example to people to experiment. I don't agree that it would be a long-term, like lifetime diet for most people generally. And he would be the first to say that he doesn't think that either. So that's one of the reasons I respect him.
Yeah. And for me, simply to put it out there, at this point, I'm 80-20, I call it. I'm like a flexible carnivore, like 80-20 for me, you know? And like, if I want plants, I'll eat them. If I don't, like I have no desire, I don't feel, I know. So for me, the carnivore diet, and Paul's kind of been a part of that, but really the movement, Sean Baker, has been like, and then also experimenting myself, has been, I don't look at vegetables as if I'm missing out. And that was the big thing. Cause I always felt like guilt if I didn't eat them, even though I was always drawn to animal foods. Now I'm just like, that's fine. I don't need them. If I don't want them, I don't need them. And if I want them, I'll enjoy them because I do enjoy them from an enjoyment perspective. And, you know, that's great. So here's somebody I met, the first Paleo Effects, actually, and it's kind of a long-term hero of mine, Mark Sisson, the OG.
Yeah. Oh, man. Mark is so cool. I was so starstruck the first time.
So was I. Yep.
I met Mark. He's just such a legend, you know. So Mark, I think he's just a wonderful example of aging in an active, healthy way that really inspires me.
Yeah.
Totally inspires me that I am intimidated to go on like an athletic outing around him, let alone with him. You know what I mean? Like the fact that he's like,
it's like pushing 70 too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's pushing 70. Oh God.
And he's fit. He's ripped, more ripped than I am, man.
Exactly. So that's such a feat. And also he's been through, you know, he was involved in P90X and deep into carb loading for a while. And then went to the other side of that. And I really do appreciate his ability to stay open-minded, to try different things in his own life and business. And he's definitely someone who also does the work. And he'd probably admit that he does too much of the work, but he's also really great at intentionally putting play in there, fun, sunshine, you know, good sleep. He's just a great example for all of us youngins in how to do this.
How to age well,
level and
on purpose. Yeah, totally. He's awesome. So we got one more, and I'll probably ask you one more question, and then we will let you go. So I've actually read this next guy's, I guess he has one book at this point, but I've been reading his blog for years, and you probably can guess, but it's James Clear.
Yeah.
And so his book, Atomic Habits, like huge multi-million copy seller and really smart guy. He's also a weightlifter, and he just always been, for him, it's first principles. Like the idea of first principles and fundamentals have always been very big for me. And when I kind of started thinking about them more, and then I read some of his work, like it's what I try to basically live my life on. I try to think about what are the first principles here, right? So for James coming on, I assume you talk about productivity. You didn't really talk about health or anything, did you? It's mostly just productivity stuff, or
a little bit. I want to say I've had him on twice over the years.
Oh, okay.
Well, the thing that sticks out in my mind is the one workout, the one exercise workout where you just, because otherwise you don't want to do it. You're going to drag your feet. You just go out and you do one set. That's it. And that for
as like, you mean as like a tiny habit. So like,
yeah,
it's like doing that first rep is the hardest, but then you're there, you just do more. Yeah.
It was that concept kind of applied in different ways. The simplistic view of all this, because I think everyone gets dragged into complexity, whether it's with nutrition or how you're exercising or what have you. I just love that James takes a step back and just whittles it all down. And that allows us to be more intentional with what we want. Because if your goal is to stay fit for the rest of your life, then doing one deadlift a week, like one set of deadlifts a week, might kind of work as long as you're relatively active in other parts of your life. And so if you look at what the problem is, like many people know what they should do. They know that they should be walking every day, hydrating, getting sun, getting vitamin D in, eating in a balanced and healthy way and what have you, but they're not doing it. Mm-hmm. And so he's someone who helps people do it and helps people think about doing it. And that's what it is. Like, we get caught in our own heads. We're like, should I do it? Should I not do it? How do I do it? But nope. If you just like, if that's your commitment, if it's a one, if I like today, for example, I've just been recording all day long. And so I literally don't have time for like a big workout, and I can't get all sweaty in between it, or it wouldn't be, it wouldn't feel right. It wouldn't be practical. So my minimum workout today is two sets of 15 pull-ups. Mm. That's it.
Yep.
And so I apply that to my own life and kind of like put that into different days. And it can be very, very effective to have these minimum ideas and also kind of like micro workouts throughout the day. These small atomic things.
Yep. So greasing the groove, that was Pavel who talked about that a lot, of like frequent exercises. And I actually was going to make a comment on that. Like the idea of getting on the ground to do one push-up, like this is kind of the idea. It's even two sets of 15 pull-ups might be a lot for some people. That might seem like a lot. So the point of the habit research, this is very heavily researched, is go do one pull-up, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you feel like that's all you can do today and you're totally fine with it, then leave. It's getting to the point where you're taking the action, you remove the resistance, you're not thinking about like, how am I going to feel this, that, and you get all this BS resistance in your mind, right? Mm-hmm. They've done research that even shows where if you put your shoes out for the gym or your outfit, like for girls, like they're always like, what do I look like? Just putting your outfit the night before makes you like 10 times more likely to go to the gym, for example.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. You know,
we have to play tricks on ourselves.
Yes, exactly.
Environmental design, that's another one of these concepts that's massive in people's lives.
Yep, totally. Well, this has been awesome, Abel. So let me just ask you, what is something that I haven't really asked or that should have been asked or be discussed right now?
I would say the spirit of cooperation with people who are doing things the same as you, differently, whether you disagree. The spirit of cooperation with other people is so important right now. We're being driven into all these different bubbles and camps, but you're someone who definitely keeps an open mind and you explore ideologies and ideas and all sorts of different ways of thinking that are different from your own. And that's how we grow. I try to do a similar thing in my own life, in my own kind of like media diet. So I would encourage people out there to keep an open mind and to go maybe old school. Look for the repetitive patterns over history that are kind of hitting us once again now. Look at why that might be happening. Go just like deep into books, as I know you're a big fan of, researching the history of where we've come from so that we don't repeat our same mistakes. We can see a lot of mistakes kind of happening around us. And so it's through education, but you can't rely on the feed, the algorithm to get you there. Go to old school books. You can still find things on the internet, but be specific in terms of what you want to learn and what you want to entertain. And also realize that there's a whole lot of nonsense out there, whether it's health, whether it's, you know, just looking at history.
It's actually more, it's mostly nonsense. Like there, it's mostly noise, and you have to pull out a signal, right? Yes. Signal versus noise. That's the thing. Well, this has been awesome. So where can people find you and follow along with what you're doing?
You can check me out. Easiest way is probably going to fatburningman.com. And that's also the name of my podcast. And the name of my new book is Designer Babies Still Get Scabies. That's at designerbabiesbook.com. And let's see, what else? VR experiences and virtual adventures, music and other things like that. That's at abeljames.com, A-B-E-L, james.com. And then just on social media, I go in the comments sometimes. I kind of dip in and out. But if people out there just want to get in touch and connect, I sincerely mean it when I say I love connecting with people and kind of
right, yep. hearing
where you're at, where you're coming from. And I know you're responsive too. And it's just, it's
too responsive.
Yeah, maybe too responsive.
It gets me pulled into shit.
But anyway, yeah, like get in touch. We'll all work through this by building our way out of this together.
Yeah, totally. Coming together, not being tribalistic, not giving into our base desire to say us versus them and this, that, and I'm right, you're wrong. And man, I mean, you can see this effect in everything in life, like politics, social media, local communities, neighbors fighting with each other. Like there's so much tribalism. And I mean, because it's built into our species and we have to evolve out of it by becoming aware and mitigating it. And so maybe just getting in groups of people and like going to events and different things. I mean, I guess events, I mean, they're opening up a little bit, but I think we need to get out in the real world. Maybe that's a good advice. Stop getting in front of a screen and get out in the real freaking world, you know?
Yeah.
That's, a reminder that's also excellent advice. That people are most people are good. This is what I remind myself of. Most people are good and they're not idiots. Even though the internet will make you think that they're evil and they're all idiots. Like that's literally what the internet also does is it tricks you. So I'll have links to everything below. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to add one other thing just because like we have similar brands and similar companies to some degree, but I think it's so important that people out there see each other as partners, as, you know, kind of comrades on this journey together. Like there's a weird thing that happens with capitalism, the way that it's set up, where we're all kind of pitted against each other. And it just does not have to be that way, especially the closer that you align, I would argue, you know, like the more that you have this belief system, philosophy, or way of showing up in the world that's helping people heal, like we need to help support each other now more than ever, because the monster that we're all up against is so much bigger than any little squabbles that happens in the politics and some of these groups, you know, some of these little communities and all of that, which have been degraded. But you know what? I just talked to like Michelle and Keith today.
PFX,
of Paleo FX. Yep. I've talked to so many people, vegans, carnivores, and everyone in between. And it's important that we come together and we try to, you know, just be really open with each other and patient and tolerant and help each other out.
I totally agree. And we can't wait for aliens to invade, because if aliens invade, then we'll have a common enemy and then we'll finally band together. But until that happens, we're going to be fighting amongst ourselves, because that's human nature.
That's right.
We don't talk about that.
Say to him, Colin, watching from the outside in and trying some of your products and all that, you are doing it so well. It's inspiring.
Appreciate that, man.
I've seen a lot of people do it poorly and really squander trust in all this and what have you. And to see someone working really, really hard, doing it the right way is super inspiring. So we need more people like you.
Yeah. Well, the path to overnight success takes at least 10 years. That's, you know, I'm at like 15 in my entrepreneurial journey, but oh man, that's a whole nother, we got to do a show on that sometime, talk about the journey and everything. It's not for everybody, but
it's hard, but it's worth it.
Yeah. And honestly, the lesson for everybody, whether you're in a business or not, and I've been reading philosophy a lot, because obviously 2020 pandemic, whatever. I moved to philosophy when like my brain is kind of like, how do I make sense of things? Right.
Yeah,
and so for me, it's like, if I had $1 billion tomorrow, what would I do with my time? Now, how can I make not having $1 billion, which is my life right now, get to that place where I would do those same things? And then the $1 billion doesn't freaking matter. Right.
Yes,
so like,
exactly.
And it's the pursuit of something, of a worthwhile goal. Generally, it's helping people, you know, I mean, that's human nature at the same time. We can kill, but we can also lift up and sacrifice ourselves and do all these amazing things. Like our species it's amazing. Our species is really amazing. But I do think the internet and like these things are like bringing out the worst parts of our species while downplaying the good parts, right? That's like the mainstream news narrative, is highlight the bad, pretend nothing is good, then you believe nothing is good, and then you radicalize and people commit terrorist acts and things like this because they're literally manipulated. Like it's...
Yes.
Oh, man. It's scary.
It's time for heart-to-heart hugs in real life.
Yeah, I know. And not be afraid of your neighbor. Like they're not going to kill you, okay? Like, come on.
We need
them.
What we're up against in supply chain and just grid going down scenarios with everything falling apart, you need your neighbors. That's one of the
myths. That's a good point. If things go really bad,
you can't homestead this on your own. We all need to support each other.
Right. Okay, well, everybody, links to everything will be in the show notes. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share, and do all those things. Check out The Fat Burning Man on iTunes, Google, Spotify, all the places. Are you on YouTube, actually? I was curious about that.
I'm on YouTube, but it's hard to find me, I think. Yeah, I've been at 49.9 subscribers for like 2 years now.
I'll put a link there as well, and I'll try to get you some subs over there. Abel, appreciate it, man, very much.
Hey, always great to talk to you, Colin. Thank you so much.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.
Hey, everybody. Colin here. Thanks for listening to that show. I want to let you know about my newest podcast over at Escaping Fragility, a show about building a life for yourself, being safe, being secure, having a plan B, so that if this crazy world of 2020 continues or gets worse, which a lot of the numbers are suggesting it will, then you and your family will be protected. A lot of my content for my personal brand has been focused on giving people the knowledge, the expertise, the skills, and just the awareness of some of the craziness that's going on so that they can protect themselves, so that they can fight back, so that they can be civilly disobedient, so that we can stymie the ever encroaching spread of government and of corporate and political agenda. If more citizens do not stand up, fight back, speak up, there's going to be nothing left to protect. And I don't like fear mongering, and I'm generally an optimistic person, but 2020 has stressed me out. At first it didn't, but then it did. When I really saw what was going on, when I read a little bit between the lines, and even now, the craziness is continuing, and I don't see it letting up anytime soon. The masses are too easily manipulated. And so I'm more concerned what's going to happen in 2021 when the next flu season comes through and another coronavirus is weaponized, and then who knows what's going to happen? Travel restrictions, mandatory vaccines, chipped and prodded like cattle. People think it can't happen. They stick their head down, but they did in Mao's China. They did in Stalin's Russia. They did in Nazi Germany. And then it was too late. And who pays the price? It's always, always, always the citizens that are having faith and that are just hoping things get better. They're the ones that always pay the price. So the first thing we can do is protect ourselves and our family, have a plan B, have an escape option, and then we can help others. Head over to Colin.coach, get on the AM5 newsletter. You'll get all the shows every week. And you can also find me on YouTube and iTunes or Spotify or Google Play. Get prepared before it's too late. We just launched our Patreon, so if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/Colin Stucker. That's patreon.com/ColinStuckert. We will have exclusive updates coming. It will also give us more opportunities to invest more in the show and release more shows. Some other bonuses with the different tiers. Check it out over at patreon.com, and thank you for your support. Another way that you can support the show is you can head over to Wild Foods and use code AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order of real food, superfood, supplements, and ingredients. These are products that I've been using myself in my daily life for years. I recommend checking out our fish oil and our collagen. And also make sure you check out the Cocotropic. It's one of my favorite products. Cocoa, mushrooms, delicious. Head over to wildfoods.co and use AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order.